Hello and welcome. This is The Art of Work, a program about how the idea of work is slowly transforming, about how we work through living and live through working. I'm your host, Anna Kravets. Our studio producer is Lyudmila Sudakova. This episode is about attempts of regulating freelance work in Ukraine and about the sometimes forgotten basics of work relations. Stay with us. The show is about the transformations of work. This means the phenomena we witness in our day-to-day life and relations, things we discuss with our friends and acquaintances, the slow changes that are difficult to track. And yet, sometimes those changes grow big to the point of getting inscribed in our country's laws and shift the way we perceive work even more. On that path, it's pretty important to mind some vital aspects of life and work, to not get carried away by the accelerationist blows or the perceived imperatives of nowadays, such as, say, economic growth, perhaps in order to do no harm. My guest, Antonio Santos, is Portuguese. 53 years old, he has 4 kids, 3 boys and a girl from 15 to 25 years of age. Since 2017, he's working in Ukraine. He helped me figure out what's wrong with Ukraine's draft laws on freelance work. Antonio's own work experience is very rich, as he started working as early as 1986, just when he entered college. He had worked on different levels of responsibility in both private and public sector, and after being Deputy Inspector General at the Labor Inspectorate in Portugal, he joined the International Labor Organization's project on enhancing working conditions in Ukraine, and kept on till now with a new project that addresses safety at work and the massive issue of undeclared work in this country. It is destined to promote social dialogue, providing trainings and capacity-building events dedicated to the international labor standards and the so-called EU acquis, or the body of common rights and obligations of EU member states. Because Ukraine, having signed the association agreement with the EU, commits to aligning its legislation and practices with the international and the EU standards. The project is working with multiple stakeholders in Ukraine, the relevant state bodies, trade unions, the ombudsperson, parliamentarians, and so on. Antonio thinks there should be a paradigm shift in terms of work safety in Ukraine. We discuss the downsides of the new bills that attempt to regulate freelance work and some other legislative attempts of changing the work relations. We decided to go to the basics and revisit the definitions of labor relations too. Our conversation might seem a bit technical at a first glance, but it's worth it because you know the devil's in the detail. Here's Antonio.
Okay, well, I didn't thought that that would be possible. If you asked me if I was imagining to work in Ukraine 10 years ago, I would say, no, get out of here. It won't happen. But it happened, and I'm glad it did. It was in the perfect time, and I'm very, very glad to work here. And I gotta tell you that Ukrainian people are very, very similar to the Portuguese. Very, and it is impressive. They are very caring with their family, with their parents. They are very religious. They are really friends of their friends. And it's and the way they behave is very similar to us. The only difference, I would say, is that Ukrainians are very close until they know you. After that, they become more expansive and relaxed with you. The Portuguese are more open from the start. In 2017, I had an invitation to join the ILO to run a project here in Ukraine. The project was called Enhancing the Labor Administration Capacity to Improve Working Conditions and Tackle Undeclared Work. And then our donor, the EU, launched a challenge to Ukraine to further support Ukraine, and more specifically in helping Ukrainians to draft legal acts that bring national legislation closer to international labor standards and to EU legislation on the areas of occupational safety and health, labor relations, labor inspection, and on tackling undeclared work. And that's how I jump into Ukraine, and I'm very happy for doing so. At this moment, this second project is halfway. We are doing kind of a balance of what we have done, reporting on the delivers, and we are very happy about the results that we achieved so far.
And this project, this current project that you're in, its name is about safe, healthy, and declared work. Could you brief us a little bit on what this means? And especially, I personally am wondering about the healthy part. What does it mean to work healthy?
Well, there is a need for a paradigm change in Ukraine, because you kind of inherited this Soviet-like understanding and approach to occupational safety and health. You kind of feel that occupational risks to your health are intrinsic to the job, they are unavoidable, and we have to just to stick with it. And that is a wrong approach. It should be an obligation of the employer to ensure that the workplace does not expose the workers to occupational risks to their safety and health. They are not unavoidable. The first principle is to avoid the risks from the start, and then to assess the risks that cannot be avoided. And then there is a lot of measures that should be taken by the employer in order to minimize the occupational risks until acceptable levels. And that is the paradigm change that Ukraine needs to focus on. To shift from an approach based on correction, protection, compensation, to an approach of prevention. Preventive measures are the ones that are focused in preventing the damaging occurrence to occur from the outset. Whereas protective measures are the ones that are focused on once the damaging occurrence appears, like a work-related accident or occupational diseases, they are aimed at minimizing the consequences of that occurrence on the health of the workers, for example. EU is focused on preventing the damaging situations from happening, not just on reducing their impact. And this project is basically focused on helping Ukraine to align its national legislation on labor relations, occupational safety and health, labor inspection, and on tackling undeclared work, precisely with international labor standards and with EU acquis.
And could you give us some maybe examples that you've encountered here in terms of this protection versus prevention, so just that our listeners could understand?
For example,
what have you, like, what is the landscape here? What have you,
for example,
seen?
It does not make any sense from the point of view of international labor standards and EU acquis to pay to the workers because they are exposed to higher occupational risks or to more hazardous working conditions. It doesn't make sense. Why? Because there is a counterproductive policy. Because when you pay more to the workers that are exposed to more occupational risks, what are you saying to those workers? You are telling them, and you don't even have to tell them, because they will choose to be exposed to more occupational risks to earn more. And that is a mistake. The state has the obligation to ensure the safety and health of everybody. And that starts by giving the example. And those measures are wrong, because they induce people to try to maintain the status quo and to maintain them under bad working conditions and exposed to occupational risks so that they earn more money. That should not be a trade-off. That is a right that they have. They should receive, of course, a salary that allows them to live decently, irrespectively of the conditions of that work. Because what really happens in Ukraine, if you look at, is that you are moving from the 8 to the 80, as we say in Portugal. When you go from one extreme to the other, you are going from a socialist system to a ultra-capitalist and ultra-liberal system, and that is dangerous if you don't put some safety brakes on the process. And the safety brakes on the process are the international labor standards and the EU acquis.
There's a recent study that says that the quantity of freelancers in Ukraine has grown by one-third over the past year. And at the same time, lawmakers are trying to legalize freelance work. And currently there is a bill that was proposed for that, the 5161 bill, that proposes zero-hour contracts and some type of social guarantee for the workers. Could you comment on this bill? In your experience, would that be an efficient mechanism that would solve the problems of unofficial employment of this type?
It can, but it depends on the way it's done. It is a good sign to regulate the employment relationship where the work pattern is entirely or mostly unpredictable, which is the case of this bill, which is focused on non-standard forms of work, where there is a variable work schedule, demand contracts, zero-hour contracts, and the platform work. And that needs to be regulated, of course, because it's important to ensure that the law accompanies the need of employers for increased flexibility, but at the same time is also needed to ensure that this flexibility is not done at the expense of decent work conditions. When we analyzed, we provided technical recommendations on the best alignment on how these two drafts on non-standard forms of work should be better aligned with the International Labour Standards and the EU acquis. To sum up, I will just tell you what are our main concerns regarding these two drafts. First of all, the content of the labour agreement and the timing and means to provide information to the workers should be better aligned with the standard that I mentioned, and should also foresee what are the obligations of providing information regarding occupational safety and health to the workers. It means that, according to the framework directive of occupational safety and health in EU, the employer has the obligation to inform workers about the occupational risks to which they are exposed to and what are the preventive measures that should be applied at each workplace. And also, workers should not suffer adverse consequences when they refuse a work assignment that either is not foreseen on their labor contract or is not requested within the time frame that should be used by the employer to request a work assignment. So they should be notified with some advance period in order for preparing themselves to provide that service. If you agree with an employer that you work for him on Wednesdays from 10 to 12, on Fridays from 2 to 4, he cannot request a work assignment Monday or at the Friday or in any period outside this time slot, and he has to request it in advance. Imagine that you agree with the employer that he has to notify you of a work assignment with 24 hours in advance, and he tells you 1 hour before that you have a work assignment. So if you refuse, you should not be subject to any adverse consequences. Also, regarding the provisions foreseeing that, and that is very worrying, that labor agreement with non-fixed working time may establish additional grounds for its termination. Why is that?
What does that mean?
It's easy. Why do you have a labor code?
To regulate the working relations.
Yes, and why you need that? Because it is the recognition that bargaining power of the employer and of the worker are not the same. Worker are on a dependent situation. That is why you call it dependent work. So labor law appears to try to regulate these unbalanced powers. Employment relationship is not a civil contract as this ultra-liberal approach wants to sell us. No, it's not. There is a dependent relation. You want to go on vacations, you have to ask permission to your company. You want to stay at home to take care of your kid, you have to ask. You want to go to the doctor during working time, you have to ask. If you are really a service provider, you don't have to explain anything. You just have to provide the service. And you can provide your service whenever you want. You just have to meet the deadline. And the rest, the beneficiary of your service, doesn't have nothing to do with it. You don't have to give any explanations. And the idea is that labor law appears to define the minimum requirements, the things that should be respected by all employers and workers. And one of those important things is the conditions for terminating a labor agreement. And the labor code establishes what are the reasons that, once verified, allow the employer to dismiss a worker. And they should be very serious ones. And they should be foreseen on law or in collective agreements. but never in an individual agreement. Why? Because as the positions and the powers, the bargaining powers are different, if you are an employee, you accept anything and you sign anything that the employer puts in front of you. Now imagine that the employer says that you can be dismissed if I don't like your makeup or your tattoo or the way you dress, or if you need to take care of your baby 2 times a week, I don't want that. You have to be present all days. If you miss one day, you are out. So imagine that the law allows you to define these conditions for terminating a contract within an individual labor contract that are even less favorable than the ones that are on the labor code.
What are your impressions and conclusions and maybe recommendations regarding the culture of work in Ukraine in general? What problems did you face and how did you find solutions?
Okay. First of all, I have to say that the employers in Ukraine are very lucky. For starters, Ukraine have, in average, very high qualified workers with very high education levels, which is not so common in Europe, by the way. Secondly, in general, workers in Ukraine are very hardworking, dedicated, responsible, and very well prepared. And that's why they are very, very wanted outside Ukraine. Like in Portugal, the Ukrainian community is the second largest now. And we love the work of the Ukrainians. And I think German will say the same. Polish guys will say the same. They are very cherished there. So Ukrainian employers have a lot of competition to retain the best ones. And of course, they have to pay better. They have to give better working conditions, because otherwise they will leave, because they have options. The problem is that in Ukraine, salaries are very low and unattractive, and in most cases, undeclared. Around 20% of the population in Ukraine works informally and have no access to the guarantees that are foreseen on the labor code, because they are informal workers. And this is without counting with the misuse of civil contracts, because you go to a supermarket and you ask to the person that is the cashier, and she is a civil contract. How is this possible? How can you say that that person is a service provider? He's not. He's a dependent worker. He has a time schedule. He cannot subcontract himself doing that job. And also the undeclaration of part of the salaries, meaning that most part of the Ukrainians receive a declared part of the salary and the rest under the table, not to pay taxes and to pay social security. And also situations where workers are totally undeclared and they are not registered anywhere. So the situation is really a bit worrying. That's why this project also is focused on helping Ukraine to reduce undeclared work. In addition, there is that trend I already mentioned in Ukraine towards a ultra-liberal approach to labor legislation based on some wrong and biased assumptions, such as that employers and workers have the same bargaining power, therefore, commercial and civil law rather than labor law should apply to the employment relationship, and no need for social dialogue, collective bargaining, and consultation of employers or workers' representatives. The workers should negotiate directly with the employers through their individual labor contracts, which, of course, it's wrong. Also, another assumption is that all regulations, and not just the excessive ones or the inadequate ones, and its enforcement, its application, puts pressure on employers, which are seen kind of as victims of the legislation, especially the FOPs. There is a need, a huge need, for the regulation and the exclusion of parts of employers from labor regulations, and need to take out the powers and the limit the activities of the public authorities that promote and enforce compliance with the legislation, especially taking the powers and limiting the activities of labor inspection. Also supported by the excuse and the argument that they are corrupted. As a consequence, we are watching the appearance of some recent worrying draft laws, because they foresee, for example, the transfer from the labor code and from collective agreements to individual labor agreements of the main rights and obligations of the parties to the employment relationship, including conditions for the termination of the employment relationship. They also foresee limitations on the powers and activities of labor inspectors. Imagine, I'm a labor inspector in Ukraine. I go to check a specific work equipment. If I verify during that inspection visit that there are two guys on a scaffold without any individual or collective protection that might fall and die, I cannot intervene because it is not within the scope of the inspection visit that led me there. What sense does it make to you? Or you are going to check that work equipment and you see that two guys are welding in a silo, exposing themselves to the occupational risk of explosion because they are welding with equipment that is not adequate to a potential explosive atmosphere. And while you are saying that, you call the employee and you say, careful, you cannot intervene. Okay, but meanwhile, there is an explosion and everybody dies, including the inspectors and the boss and the workers. What sense does it make? So, labor inspector should have the discretionary power to initiate inspection visits. And this legislation in Ukraine, this legal framework, foresees that the grounds for making an inspection visit do not consider the free initiative of labor inspectors to intervene. For example, in Portugal, my country, or in any country of EU, a labor inspector is on the street. He sees something like guys hanging out on a scaffold in imminent and serious dangers of falling and dying. They must intervene and even suspend immediately the works. And the works can only be resumed once the protective measures and the preventive measures are taken and the labor inspector that suspended authorized the resume of the works. That's how it should work here also. Because there is nothing more important than human life, no matter what. So, and that's why I think the change is important. Flexibilization of working condition is important, but that flexibilization should respect and should ensure the rights of the workers to safety, to health, and to decent working conditions are ensured also. And one of the principles of the EU is that the competition between companies and countries should not be done at the expense of the workers. And by the way, there is a recent European Parliament resolution that calls on the government of Ukraine to consider a lot of aspects on this alignment. And I would refer you to it because it's very, very important. And I hope that the government of Ukraine pays attention to that EU resolution on the implementation of the association agreement with Ukraine. And that's pretty much it, Anna. I don't know if you have any additional questions. I will be happy to...
Thanks so much. A lot of questions may arise, but unfortunately, none of it could go into our program, which is limited in time. Yeah. Thank you so much, Antonio.
No, it was my pleasure. It was my pleasure. Thank you. Thank you for the opportunity.
That was Antonio Santos for The Art of Work. He added that when you look at it closely, actually the employers themselves would profit more if they provided the safety and built healthy relations which motivated the workers. And that's that. Not so complicated after all. Lawmakers and especially the employers still have time to prevent those cuts of basic working rights and thus avoid human rights violations of those who are dependent in those unequal relations that we've just dissected. And now we wind up this edition of The Art of Work from the studios of Radio Ukraine International. My studio producer and I are wishing you all the best. Stay with us.